Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with Right Said Fred. That's right, both of them, Richard and Fred. You've probably, obviously, everybody knows who Right Said Fred are. And more, you know, I guess in recent months, you've probably seen them on news outlets and social media outlets voicing their thoughts and opinions on the current climate. And that does feature in today's episode as well, alongside lots of really amazing chat about some cracking records. And also just talking about the kind of the impact that I'm Too Sexy had and, you know, the subsequent hits as well, obviously, and forthcoming music. But just we get into like how that record did not sit anywhere. It felt like it just come from nowhere in a time of Madchester and rave and hip hop. There's this bananas record that you just couldn't pigeonhole. We go in on that, and it's a great chat. It's interesting having two guests, which is a first. Normally, just have the one guest, but how can you have Right Said Fred and not have Richard and Fred? So that's what you've got today. So before we get on with the episode, a few thank yous. Thanks to the Distraction Pieces Network and Scroobius Pip. Thanks to 76 for producing this. Thanks to you listeners for continuing to listen to this podcast and supporting it for the last 3 years now. And there's 330 odd episodes now. So when you get to the end of this chat with Rich and Fred, then go and check out the back catalogue and go and get stuck in. You can hear chats with artists as diverse as Fatboy Slim to Suede to, oh gosh, Motley Crue, Foo Fighters, actors such as Maxine Peake, Joe Hartley, Amanda Abington, Michael Smiley, producers such as Butch Vig. The list goes on. Go and have a rummage in the archives. And if you'd like to support the podcast, you can do that over on Patreon. That's patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. And for 79p a month, you get access to loads more other content as well. Radio shows and all sorts of stuff. Anyway, I know why you're here. Let's get on with it. Please enjoy Off the Beat and Track Podcast with Right Said Fred. Sorry, I've interrupted the podcast, but with good reason. Hotel Chocolat are our sponsors. You know that now because I tell you about it every episode. But they've been super kind now. And you may have heard me talking about the products from the Cacao Bar. And there's gins, cream liqueurs, all sorts of wonderful chocolatey goodies. And what they've done is they've set a page up on the website that you can go to. And all you've got to do is just for you Off the Beaten Track listeners, go over there, answer a question, and you could win the full range delivered to your front door. I mean, that's kind of them. All you have to do is go to this place, hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. That's OTBT as in Off the Beaten Track podcast. hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. Go get your grubby little mitts on some deliciously chocolatey drinks, courtesy of our sponsors, Hotel Chocolat. I'll get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin. Right, we are recording.
Yes, we are.
Rich, what Fred, how you doing?
We're good, man. Yeah, we're fine, thanks, mate. Yeah, we're good. We're okay, we're fine.
Good. Where are you today?
We're in Berkshire.
Berkshire.
And it's a beautiful sunny day, not a cloud in the sky.
Very nice.
Yeah, so it's actually the only good thing about the UK at the moment is the weather, which is actually
lovely.
Pretty cool.
Lovely. Yeah, I had a little frosty dog walk, but the sun was shining, so that was quite nice this morning. So
yes, we had a frosty other day.
Right. As ever, I start this podcast. Have you got your song choices with you? Can you remember what you've...
Yes, we have.
We have.
Perfect. Right. Track one, gent. So this is quite novel. Normally, I only do this with one person. So it's the first time I've had two people on the same podcast. I'm looking forward to it. Gents, I'm going to ask you, please. I'll start with you first, Richard.
Okay.
The song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro.
Well, there are loads of them. There are loads of them. Obviously, there's one track that doesn't get mentioned at all is a track called Glove by Family, which has got a really, really cool, very, very sort of, you know, understated bass line intro. But the one I've picked is Money for Nothing. By Dire Straits, and the reason is because every time I hear that guitar, I can't believe how good it is. You know, I just think it's just staggeringly fantastic.
It's extraordinary.
That whole intro is.
Yeah.
The only downside for me is that you've got to go through all that keyboard stuff. I want all that stuff before you get to the guitar. And probably if I'd been in the mixing room, I would have cut that bit off and gone straight into the guitar, you know.
I think it sets up the guitar well.
It does.
Because this was your choice as well, right, Fred?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it was a close one for me because I would also go with LaGrange, ZZ Top.
Yeah.
For the same reason. It's an extraordinary guitar sound and part. It's a moment.
And that ZZ Top LaGrange thing, when I first heard it and all that howl, all that stuff that he does, I thought it was rubbish. I really couldn't stand it.
I told him.
And now I can't wait to play it.
It's really weird. And what's really cool about it is the little
snare drum rim
pattern that Frank Beard does.
Yeah.
And the bass, if you listen to the bass line, Dusty Hill's bass line in that, it drives the track. People talk about powerhouse trios. Mm. I think they are in the top one or two.
Yeah.
I think they're up there with Cream and Jimi Hendrix Experience. I think they're just extraordinary.
In terms of band. Yeah, in terms of intros, there are actually so many.
It's actually quite
difficult to pin it down.
Yeah.
But I based it on what I play in the gym. What I tend to, you know, so if I'm in the gym and I need to be pumped up, and Bill Withers comes on, as good as he is, I move it on to something a little bit more funky.
Also, if you talk about guitar intros, Jimmy Page,
for Christ's sake. Yeah, exactly.
Rock and roll guitar. And it's very, very difficult. It's a bit unfair to pick one because it suggests it's better than another.
Yeah.
Which it isn't really. It's just what we felt at the time.
I was totally aware that all of your choices on any other day you wake up and it'd be completely different.
Yeah. Like, and then you've got superstition.
Yeah.
I mean,
and you mentioned Hendrix as well, and it's like Crosstown Traffic and Voodoo Child. These are all mega intros.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to go back to Money for Nothing. So just to clarify, I mean, it's about as big an 80s production as you can get, that track, isn't it?
And it is.
But just to clarify, Rich, you're going to absolutely fuck Sting off out of it and just kick right in with the guitar, right?
I like what Sting does at the end with all the sort of falsetto type stuff. I quite like it. So I'd keep him in the session.
Right.
I know. I'd say, Sting, you know, don't go. We'll still need you for the end.
Yeah. Sit down.
And just hold on while we get it through the guitar.
I'm going to make some tea, you tantric.
Fred's right. The keys do set up the guitar really well.
Mm.
And also, Sunset on Swing, when I first heard that, and I'm sure lots of other people are the same, the way Mark Knopfler plays the guitar, the style that he has, I'd never heard it before. It was a very, very special thing. So that, for me, that whole... It's the colour of it, really. It's the colour of what he plays. It's just, it's for me, mesmerising. And it never ceases to entertain me. Yeah. It's really
good. And interestingly, most of the intros that you've mentioned are all quite long. And I just always like to ask songwriters this. when you watch, and I've tried this, I've done 330 episodes of this podcast, and I've never framed this question correct, so I'm going to try again. But when I watch my children, like, listen to music, they've got their phones, and they've got very fast thumbs. Everything's moving very quickly. And I just think nowadays, if somebody would have presented that intro, like a new band presents Money for Nothing to a record label, I think they're just going to go, not a chance.
I agree.
And so my question to you is when you's right now, do you approach it in the more sort of traditional songwriting sort of sense of, like, this is a song, it's a piece of art, it's going to be what it's going to be, or are you aware of your TikToks and your Spotify playlists and all of the kind of the sort of, I guess, that sort of pop, and I love to use the word science, of like, right, hook them straight away and keep it, no fat on it. Like, do you still think the song should be what it is?
We tend to think...
Do you get the question? Sorry, because I've still never quite got it right.
No, we do get that. Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, with I'm Too Sexy, the original version of that did have quite a long intro and a long outro. And we just thought, let's just cut to the fucking chase.
Also, we had no money.
We had no money.
Had nothing to lose.
Yeah. So, and Dippy Dippy and another song we've done, and we did one in January called You're in the Light is Love. We cut straight to the chase. We got a new song coming out called Godsend in January. Pretty much the same there. So it's driven by the song. Some songs will have a longer intro. It depending on what we think the song needs. If we think the listener and the song benefits from getting straight in, that's what we do. We don't worry about radio anymore because radio really play us. Also, what we tend to, how we think about songs is we look at it in terms of synchronizations, usage, what we want, and what's best for the song. So it sort of depends where we are in on the song and what we think the song's going to do.
Also, sometimes you just feel like you want to push it. I remember with Hey Yeah, which was Outkast. One of the things I remember about that was the chorus. I would have made a big mistake because they did it absolutely right. I would have halved the first chorus because it seems like it goes on too long.
But actually,
they get it right because in a way, what they do is they force you, they challenge you. Yeah. They're sort of saying, this is what we want.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a part of me which, if there's an intro that's too long, you're sitting there thinking, this intro's too long. There's a part of me that wants to say, I don't give a toss. I don't really care. If people don't like it, they don't like it.
But I think
Fred's right. I think we're split. Sometimes we think, let's cut to the chase. And other times we think, no, actually, let's just let it happen, And it's a very, case-by-case thing.
Yeah, it is. You know,
Really.
Okay. Right, for track two, gents, I'm going to take you back. And I'm going to ask you, Fred, first. The first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Right, that would have been... Let me just think, because I've made a couple of notes. I think it was probably Bad Moon Rising by Creedence. In as much as I can remember this really quite well. I spoke quite well. I remember cycling. We used to cycle to school. And I had these mates we'd cycle back and forwards with. And I remember saying to them on the corner of Baldwin's Hill Lane and Linfield Road, I want to play this track. And I had it. It was on Asylum Records. And I had it at home. And it was like a fix. I'd get in and play it. It was like, and I'd play it round and round and just look down the guitar. And John Fogerty's a really, really underrated singer and writer.
What an intro.
And a good intro as well. And that, I think that was probably, it was a sort of a mum and dad had, or I bought Shapes of Things by the Yardbirds.
Yep.
That was pretty cool as well. There was Rider White Swan, which I think Richard's.
Oh, that's mine.
Yeah. There was a few, I remember hearing, I remember hearing that when I was a kid and I was thinking, what on earth is that? Yeah. And then the slide down, and the sound of the guitar. And so there was a few, but Bad Moon Rising was the song I remember I had to get back and play. It had a I felt a bit like a user. You know, I was needing my fix.
It's also it's really appropriate today.
Yeah, completely.
I mean, I know you know that song seems to me to be more about floods and the end of time and all that kind of stuff. But I was listening to it in the gym the other day, and a lot of the lyrics are very prescient, I think, for the way the world is going now. The song I remember is "Ride a White Swan," obviously, for me. And the reason was because when I first heard it, it sounded to me like it came from absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It doesn't sound to me like, oh, it's got a blues bass, it's got a kind of rock and roll bass or a timbre. It was like he was living on one of the outer rings of Saturn and wrote this song with absolutely no reference to anything that was familiar, and it just happened.
Yeah. Well,
and it's under 2 minutes, I think.
I think
it's under 2 minutes. It's just brilliant.
You know? Tyrannosaurus Rex. Because I worked in a record shop on the Saturday job, and I remember hearing Deborah.
Oh, Deborah.
Oh, Deborah. And I remember hearing that, and I thought, who is this guy? And reading up on it, because it was the Gatefold albums then. And he was into this whole mystic thing. I think he was in France.
Listen to his lyrics.
Yeah. And when Ride a Swan came out, I remember thinking, oh, it's that guy.
Yeah.
And he had that mystic kind of wizard going on. Yeah. And I liked all that. We were heavily into the glam stuff with Sweet and the early David Bowie, Gary Glitter. So I know you can't talk about Gary Glitter now, but we refused not to, because I know putting his proclivities to one side, some good people made that music.
And
the music should not be penalised, and the song should not be penalised because of his. Mental issues and his weirdness.
Well, I think they played Wagner in Israel. And Wagner was an anti-Semite.
Yes. So, I think it's important to distinguish.
These things are possible.
Yeah, I had this argument online. So people should never play Gary Glitter. I said, what about the poor people? Why should they be? Why should they suffer?
Yeah.
Because they made the mistake of hooking up with someone who's got some seriously unpleasant problems.
Also,
you know?
The song is separate from him.
It's
really weird you mention this, because it comes up a hell of a lot on this podcast of separating the art from the person. And if you can't do that, then you're not going to be able to look at certain paintings in the Louvre. Because Michael Jackson comes up so much on this podcast.
So many people
will reference Michael Jackson. I've had a couple that say they just don't listen to Michael Jackson records anymore. I've spoke to DJs that's like, well, we don't really play them in the clubs anymore just because some people are... And it's like, I suppose Jackson's different because he's never actually been convicted of anything as such. But, you know, there's so many people's work goes into that. And you're right.
Yeah.
You know, should they be penalised for the actions of some... body that was part of that process, that it's a very strange one.
There's a whole load of backroom people.
It's like Ian Watkins and the Lost Prophets. Those guys in the band, they shouldn't be made to suffer just because of his problems. It's a very difficult call, but I'm quite passionate about the music thing. I think the song is an element on its own. It has its own life, and it shouldn't be attached to other people's whether it's racism or sexual rated, problems.
It's a bit like Sinatra. You know, it's like not playing Sinatra because he had affiliations with the mafia, supposedly. I really like Sinatra, and that would make no difference to me at all. You know, so I think Fred's right. You have to separate the art itself from the person that produced it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you mentioned some of the records that you had on at home, Fred. Was it a musical household growing up? Did the parents have music on?
It was in terms of mum.
Mum was, yeah.
Mum loved Dean Martin.
Frank Sinatra,
Trini Lopez.
Glenn Miller.
Mum would play those. Dad bought, in all fairness, Dad was not at all music driven.
No.
He could hear melodies and he'd whistle stuff, but it wasn't a big thing in his life. But in all fairness to him, and he was a great guy.
Yeah.
He went and bought this. We needed a record rack because we were buying more albums, and he came back with this fuck off radiogram
that had a record rack in it.
Yeah. And we were comfortable. We certainly weren't wealthy. We were middle to lower middle class. And he came back with this radiogram, and he did that for us. He did that for Mum,
yeah,
because he didn't give a crap about. He would rather have a snooker table or something, probably. Yeah. But he was a sweetheart, and we used to play music unfeasibly loud with our heads right up against the speaker, you know. And mum and dad would call that, and they'd just leave us to it. Occasionally, after dad, dad worked in London after a long day at work, mum would come in and say, "Look, you got to turn this down, man."
Yeah.
You know, because dad needs a, you know, and she was right to say that because we got all day to play that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't a big part of our mum and dad's life, but mum loved dancing. She loved the glamour of how she saw entertainment, and we got the bug pretty early on, just because we started going to see bands. Christ, I reckon I was probably as young as 13 or 12
when we saw
our first bands.
I think for both of us, there was no other career that we fancied doing.
No.
It wasn't like I was tempted to be a doctor, but then I picked up the guitar, or I wanted to be a lawyer. I remember once at school, I went to the careers office, and I was thinking at the time of being a solicitor. So I went in, and I said to the two girls sitting there, I said, "Can you give me some information on soliciting?" They all burst out laughing.
Oh, you weren't even winding them up?
No.
That's even better.
You were soliciting.
Yeah. It turns out we ended up in an industry full of whores.
Amazing. Let's get on to that then, and that point in your life. Because for track three, I'm going to ask you about the song that reminds you of your time at school.
Yeah. Well, there's two. Fred's, I think Fred's is Brown Sugar.
Rolling Stones' Brown Sugar, yeah.
And mine was Hot Love by T-Rex again.
Yeah.
So why does Brown Sugar?
Brown Sugar, me playing guitar at school, I was about one of the few people that used to take their instruments to school, and I would practice in breaks and stuff like that. And I just adopted the whole music thing quite passionately, and I was working in record shops. And when I'd had a couple of drinks when I was a little bit younger, stupidly and mistakenly, I used a short impression of Mick Jagger, which was a very stupid and
I've seen that.
Oh, don't.
Can you do it?
No. Can you imagine what a wanker I must have looked like? I remember the time I did it in this school party, and it was to Brown Sugar. But the song was just extraordinary when I first heard
the lyrics, right?
the way the Stones use acoustic guitars to bolster the electric is masterful.
Well, what's interesting
and
now
and the tunings they use, you know?
What's interesting now is they won't play Brown Sugar live because
that's
of
right.
It is so pathetic and
what's happened to them?
Rock and roll, you know, please. Yeah. And also the other thing about it is that every blues track, old blues track you hear, every blues track is either misogynistic or racist or something.
Yeah.
You know, what we were saying earlier, if you apply all that woke rubbish to art and music, there's absolutely nothing to look at and nothing to listen to. But you've got to get rid of it. It's nonsense.
Yeah, there's a Big Bill Bruzy track called White, Brown and Black, I think it is. And basically saying, you know, if you're white, it's going to be all right. If you're brown, stick around. If you're black, get back. And he's this black blues artist doing this song, talking about trying to go for a job, trying to get this, trying to get that. And now you'd probably have some people come out and say, he can't say that, he can't say brown. Yeah. Well, he can say what the fuck he wants. Yeah. It's his song.
Yeah.
You don't want to play it, don't play it.
One of the things I love is I was playing Stay With Me by the Faces the other day.
That's a great song.
And it is so non-PC. It is great. It is absolutely, this guy's just bedding this really ugly bird. He doesn't care that he looks terrible. He's basically saying, get out of my house before I wake up, because, you know, and don't pretend that there's anything going on here apart from a quick one-nighter.
Yeah.
And it's completely non-PC. It's, I mean, he's rude about her, disparaging and everything, you know. And I doesn't mean to say that I'm like that, but I can listen to it and separate that. You know, message from the way I live.
Yeah. So it's a movement in a soul.
Yeah, these people think it's a bit like looking at cigarettes, turning you into a smoker. You know, it's this idea that you have no self-control, that you have no self-sovereignty, if you like, over your personal behaviour. I can't stand that position, that tribal kind of... it's like Biden said, if you're black and you're voting Republican, you ain't black. You know, it's that nonsense.
Yes.
It's this sort of critical race theory rubbish that I just won't have it. You know?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But, anyway...
I want to touch on, you mentioned Rider White Swan, and I just, you know, being young and, you know, you mentioned feeling like, you know, them songs were literally sort of beamed down from space, like,
yeah,
and
yeah.
You mentioned The Sweet and, you know, so much of the glam stuff, like, yeah. I take it Top of the Pops was a ritual for yous.
Yes, very much so.
Because you wouldn't see these people anywhere else, would you? It's not like, you know, this is obviously, you'd get your fix from Top of the Pops.
Yes.
And I just want to know a few questions regarding Top of the Pops. A, it must have just been, I'm a little bit younger than you two, and I kind of missed glam and punk, unfortunately. And I can't imagine how fucking exciting it must have been to have seen Bolan and to have seen Bowie and, you know, Rotten and all of that stuff. And just it must have looked like it was just to have been young and caught that at a young age as well. The influence and excitement that must have been in and around that. Like, just talk me, you know, through how that...
Well, first of all, you're right. You don't... You know, there was no social media. There was none of this exposing, you know, behind-the-scenes thing. You may have got something in Melody Maker about a tour or something, or NME. But generally speaking, these artists, you only saw them if you actually rocked up at a gig.
Yeah.
And we started going to shows quite early, and there was a gig in... Croydon, I'm sure it was called the Greyhound.
It had quite a back room.
Had quite a big, large back room to it. And we used to watch Whistle Test to try and catch on the bands breaking on, and we'd read the music press and all this stuff. And we, we saw Roxy Music.
Yeah.
And then I went on and on Whistle Test, and Bob Harris was pretty disparaging.
Yeah, he didn't like
them. But I just thought they were extraordinary. And so we went up and saw them at the back of this pub in the Greyhound. And when Brian Ferry came out, he had this leopard print jacket on.
This quiff.
And this quiff was gelled out like this. I was about 13 or something.
Yeah.
And I took my school tie off. I'm standing there in my school uniform just watching this. I'm just thinking, what is this, man? This is just out there. And you're around these other people, sort of like-minded people, what you're experimenting with this new thing, whatever you want to call it. And they were saying, not quite the same with Mark Bolan, because we saw him at Fairfield Hall. First of all, even as a massive fan, I knew the band would just
sound.
It was a bad night for them.
Yeah.
I was just a kid, and even I could tell, actually, this sounds pretty shit.
Yeah.
Although I was a big fan, I think they just had a bad night. But we saw David Bowie at the Greyhound as well, and that was around just as Starman was breaking.
Wow.
It was before they really sort of took off. He had the blue guitar. He had the blue acoustic, Starman. And it was just, it was extraordinary. So quite a few bands. I saw Barclay James Harvest.
Not the most exciting band to watch.
Very, very...
Melodically very good.
Yeah, melodically really good. Like, not dissimilar to Floyd in in bits. And we used to go see loads of bands. We saw Stray and Arthur Brown.
Yeah, a friend of mine told me, he said, I remember his Roland, his name was, at college. And he said, I'm going to see a band tonight. Do you want to come? So I said, what are they like? And he said, well, he knew what they were like. He said, well, it's a band called Stray. They're kind of folky. So I said, oh, all right, then I'll go, you know. We were in a room that was the size of about three toilets. They had more Marshall stacks in that room than I've ever seen before. The loudest gig I've ever been to in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things about pop now is how incredibly safe it is.
It's just,
you know, and all that experimentation back in the day. I mean, Alex Harvey was really, is interesting from that point of view, you know. And what you were saying earlier, you know, that you put an intro on a song. I mean, would Bohemian Rhapsody get played on the radio now?
No chance.
Not a chance. We have lost, in the UK, we have lost any sense of risk-taking with music. And I think the labels are so obsessed with back catalogue and keeping afloat that they're not prepared to risk anything, really. And so that's why we're stuck with cruise liner singers like Adele. Then that's you know, and who looks like a newsreader. You know, I'm sure she's lovely, but it's not the most exciting music you're going to hear. And, you know, when I watch Iggy Pop and people like that, I don't particularly like it. But what I love is the sheer exuberance of it and the we don't give a damn attitude. And that is missing, sadly. Everybody's so anxious to please the man now that all experimentation's out. So what you have to do is you have to make pubs smoking, you have to get VAT off all the product in pubs, and you have to get politicians and the health and safety people out of the way. Then you'll have a vibrant artistic community. Until that happens, it's finished.
It's so, you know, this comes up quite a lot as well, Rich. It's weird that you sort of mention, you know, that, you know, all of your big selling artists, you know, are Adele and Ed Sheeran, which are Radio 2-esque. It's safe, isn't it? You know,
and, it is very safe.
And you know, there will always be a market for that. You know, and there always has been a market for that. But that does need to be, you know, the flip side of that needs to be an Iggy Pop, a Rotten. You know, and it's so strange. Even like me, like I would have been 17, 18, around 89.
Oh, okay.
So I caught acid house. I caught the evolution of it, like hip hop and I remember watching Top of the Pops and seeing the Stone Roses and the Happy Mondays on the same episode and thinking, what the fuck's this? This is different. This is not like what I was used to. And then it was like, It was something a bit different and exciting and edgy. Yeah. And then I do think that's when the kind of the road splits and you make your choice. It's like, right, do you know what? I'm going to go down that road of Radio 2, keep it safe. I like a bit of everything. Or you can go, do you know what? I want something edgy. I want to be scared by it. I want to go to watch a gig and I want to be unsure of what's going on. And you know, and just being, you want that excitement and that rock and roll, I guess.
Yeah. Well, what was really good about Top of the Pops back in the day was that there was no decision within the program as to what was cool and what wasn't. Mm. And I can remember sitting there watching, we'd both sit there watching Top of the Pops, and then Baccarat would come on.
Or Terry Wood. With the flower song.
So you'd just hang in there for one record that you thought Alice Cooper or something, you know.
Yeah.
But it, all credit to Top of the Pops back then, and also the charts. When you had the chart, there was nobody behind it saying, "Well, you can listen to this because I'm," you know. I remember the whole thing with PSY and Gangnam Style.
Mm.
How little respect people had at some radio stations for that track, and it's a great track and an absolutely brilliant video.
Mm. Yeah.
But the reason was it wasn't perceived to be cool.
Mm.
It wasn't. He didn't live in Manchester and he didn't have one eyebrow. You know what I mean? It's like they had just decided that this guy wasn't cool.
It was the Fern Cottons of this world that were trying to take what was cool, and you know, she got fed up because she didn't have the power that YouTube does.
Yeah,
so it went bonkers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's a real shame that music has become so infested with this sort of that's cool, that isn't, that's great, and that isn't. You know, and the charts were good for that purpose. So if you had Terry Wogan at number one, it was number one. You had to play it.
Do you think though? Do you think that there will always be a movement? Do you not, you know, I mean, I run a nightclub, and that's an alternative nightclub that I've been at for 30 years, and I've seen so many different sorts of movements in music go through it, and, you know, from what was happening in 89 to then seeing the sort of the grunge movement and guitar thing happening in the early 90s, and then Britpop, et cetera, et cetera. You know, just these like kind of things, that these moments in youth culture which throw up a Nirvana or an Oasis, and that changes the kind of, you know, the grounds of it for a bit. And you know, I've seen it again maybe recently, with the Arctic Monkeys, just being these young lads that just kind of made it through MySpace and demo tapes being passed around. Everyone, have you heard this Arctic Monkeys thing? You know, I love that sort of thing. Still, there's pockets of it there, but I wonder if we're going to get anything new. I don't know. I'm 48. I don't know if I'm too old to know that that's going on. You know, I guess maybe I am too old, and you know, there's kids, there's movements going on that kids are thinking are the most electrifying, exciting things that.
Yes,
I'm not cool enough to know about, and exists. I hope that exists, but for it to cut through and make a dent like Nirvana, Bowie, and all of them sorts of things, I don't know if it's going to happen. I hope it does.
I think it will, but not right now. I don't think the climate is. You know, you've got, because of COVID.
It's so compliant.
There's a lot of compliance out there, and that goes right across music, promoters, club owners, blah, 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 agents. I think it could happen through DJs. It can happen. My daughter's 23. She turned me on to, it is quite conservative, but nevertheless, it's, you know, chain smokers and Clean Bandits and Flight Facilities and a few of these bands. And I also still, and also through COVID, in fact, I've been listening to a bit more rap, because there seems to be a bit more willingness within the rap community to talk about this stuff. And I think the Hi-Rez track, Where's the Revolution, is a really good track. Really good track. And so I think everything has its ups and downs, and there will be a silver lining through this somewhere. And where that's going to come, I don't know. But I think you will get another stand up, really good, you know, three piece, four piece, or a David Bowie or someone. I think it will happen. Maybe not in the next year or two. Yeah. Maybe it'll take a bit more time. But I am confident it will happen. I think you need more chaos inside people's heads. The compliance at the moment, I think, will suffocate anything vaguely experimental. And interestingly, the one experimental thing that isn't being suffocated is the vaccine, which is an experimental drug which people are accepting with open arms, literally.
Yeah. Literally with open arms, Yes, it is. I think that you have to, if you look back through the time, the interesting thing with, say, the 60s is that being opposed to government positions on, say, Vietnam or whatever it was, pop music was right in the middle of it. Pop music was absolutely central to the sense of rebellion and the sense of questioning. And now pop music is completely accepting everything that the government does. Very few artists are coming out and saying anything. Very few artists are recording anything. As Fred said, you know, the rap artists are more vocal than many others.
Yeah.
And we are sort of, you know, focused on, because we're speaking out loud, but actually all we're doing is repeating what was done in the 60s and 70s, when people were more, when pop music was in a way an alternative culture.
And it just voiced, we're just voicing an opinion.
You know, it's bizarre the way, I mean, somebody said to me the other day, who could imagine that the band that recorded I'm Too Sexy are now speaking out about blah, blah. And I remember thinking two things, really. Well, one, you're allowed to speak out. This is, as far as I understand, this is still a democratic country,
just about,
supposedly. And secondly, you know, you don't record a track like I'm Too Sexy if you're worried about what people think.
Yeah.
You only record that song if you don't care.
Do you know what, though? Just to talk about Sexy, I was watching, I love watching the retrospective Top of the Pops that they put on the Friday nights. And you guys were on there. And obviously, I caught that track at the perfect age. I would have been, you know, sort of 17, 18. I remember just thinking, this is fucking mad. And I watched it again on Top of the Pops the other weekend, and I was like, it's fucking mental. It's like, what's going on here? Like, because there's all sorts of movements going on in music there, and then there's this They're shoes. And I mean this with the greatest of respect as well. Yeah. Like, it doesn't sit anywhere.
No, it doesn't.
Where would you put this? Like, and I just thought, when I sort of went back and watched it again, I was like, no, it still sits outside of any box. It does. And that's testament to like a cracking tune. Do you know what I mean?
We didn't know that we were doing anything unusual. It wasn't like we did it and thought, wow, this is going out there a bit. We just thought it was a pretty cool little tune. That's all we, you know. And it was only retrospectively, when everybody started telling us what they thought, that we suddenly thought, actually, no, that was a bit. It was a bit weird. And I remember we did a gig. Kid Jensen was the DJ at a somewhere out in Essex or somewhere, and we've got some pictures of us doing, and it was one of our first PAs with I'm Too Sexy, and the audience may as well have been standing there with all their mouths open. And Kid Jensen looks like he's landed on the wrong planet, and his GPS ain't working. You know, it's completely bizarre. You know, and interestingly enough, in the early days, our record company thought our audience was exclusively gay. Yeah, they got that wrong. We did some gay clubs up north, and on one particular occasion, we got booed off.
They thought we were straight.
They thought we were straight and taking the piss. So and our audience has always been mums and dads.
Yeah, always. Yeah, yeah. Predominantly female.
Yeah.
Mums and dads thing.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It is, yeah.
I'm going to take you back, gents. First song you remember buying from a record shop?
I remember mine.
I'm pretty sure I've got mine was Shapes of Things. Yes, it would have been. Yeah, Shapes of Things by the Yardbirds. I went in Crestwood. I must be 11, 10. I'm not even sure when it was released. But that was the first, pretty sure that was the first one I remember, because I think it was on Parlophone. Was it a black label? I can't remember now.
No.
And I just like the...
Lovely.
Band today.
Yeah, and it goes all through this.
Yeah.
And in those days, they put the whole track through the lesbian.
Yeah, they phase it or something.
They phase it.
I think that must be the first track. I'm pretty sure it's hard to remember because I know we bought Border Song. Was that the one you bought?
My first order was Border Song by Elton John. And back in the day, I had to wait 7 weeks for that single. And that was back in the day before Elton John discovered show business and he was cool. He is no longer cool. But that song is fantastic.
Yeah, great. It's a wonderful song.
It's a wonderful song. And I love the quasi-religious aspect of it. It's sort of got a religious aspect to it, which I really, really liked. And I was a big Elton John fan until I saw him on the front of a cover with his mask on. I just realised he'd gone completely mad.
I think them early, even like stuff like sort of Madman Across the Water and that, them records are
good records.
Fucking incredible. You know.
And I think he had a really interesting soul to him at that point.
Yeah.
You know, the early stuff is really powerful. Honky Tonk Chateau. For me...
We should mention the lyricist.
Bernie Taupin.
Yeah.
Without the lyricist, if you just take those melodic lines
without and the lyric.
Really average lyrics on, it doesn't have the appeal. So Bernie Taupin should get a mention.
Is Honky Chateau, you know, is that the one with Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatters on that?
It's Lately, I've Been Thinking, I Mentioned Miss Marina, Marina.
And Marina's on that.
Great records, man.
I mean, for me, because I bought all the early albums, for me it was...
Goodbye,
Yerba Road was the beginning of the end for me.
Yes.
I started to feel this is going a bit...
Caribou was
It's going a bit jazz hands, you know. I loved the early stuff, it was really... Yeah. Really solid. And I thought Captain Fantastic was calling him, so I sort of bowed out of that.
Yeah, Captain Fantastic had one track on there that I quite liked, which was Meal Ticket. I quite liked the riff, but again, the production was pretty terrible, very safe, and the writing had got a very kind of, I don't know, sort of... almost habitual. It didn't surprise you any longer, you know.
Yeah.
I think Bernie Taupin as a lyricist should go down in history as one of the best lyricists the UK ever produced. Him. Yeah, no doubt about it. Elton John should be singing his praises every single day, because without him, the stuff wouldn't have the appeal.
No, it wouldn't. No question.
Let's go clubbing, fellas. Okay. Track 5, the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Ooh, right.
Pump up the volume.
The volume.
That would be a great song, yeah.
There's your remix right there.
It's true. Pump up the volume was a moment. I think it was 86, 87? I can't quite remember.
Probably.
Maybe 87, that.
Or maybe? Right, okay. That really blew me away. There was a little club in Putney called...
Relax.
Reflex. I think we're still called. And I previously was so close, I used to go wander down there. And they had a couple of good DJs down there. And I remember hearing Pump Up the Volume. I just thought, man, this is... that's where I started to get... I thought, why can't we have club music with guitars? And I don't mean disco. I mean club music with guitars.
Yeah.
Which is what we tried to do with Sexy. And I just loved it. I just thought, what an extraordinary track. And then I remember hearing Nomad's Devotion and what was the other one? I absolutely love. There was the rap. Now the there was that.
Heavy D.
Delight, was it?
I can remember, just sorry, very hijacked the conversation a bit. I remember in Subterranea in Notting Hill.
What a venue. Forgot about that.
Great venue, man. Mm. And I was up on the balcony, and it was Jeremy Healey was playing, who actually turned down I'm Too Sexy, actually, as it happens.
Yeah.
But anyway.
He'll be getting a lawyer at any minute.
Yeah, so I'll say there was Jeremy Healey, and he just stopped the thing. Stopped what he was playing and dropped Grooves in the Heart.
Wow.
And that's listening to that track, and and the tambourine was incessant. And I thought, and we were playing around with some ideas at the time. I thought, man, we've got to do a track with a tambourine in your face like that.
Phil Spector was the one for tambourine.
Yeah, with this house
beat. Phil Spector loved the tambourine.
Yeah, that's why Sexy has such a loud tambourine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just remember, and then, bah, 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 da, 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 and you go, and you got that, didn't you? And
yeah.
It was a track with such, it had such a positive aspect to it. It was a great track.
Yeah. Mine was relaxed. Yeah.
Rich, tell me it's the full New York mix.
Yeah. Well, I was with my partner Stuart in Heaven, and they played Relax. Probably first time I heard it was actually in a bar up in Wimbledon Village. At the Dog and Fox, which was then, I thought they had a game night one night a week. And I heard that, and I just remember thinking how amazing it was. And then I heard it at Heaven, and they played it on a loop, round and round and round. And I must have been dancing for us. I use the expression loosely dancing. but I must have been on the floor doing something for about half an hour. They just played it round and round and round. And then I saw the video, of course. Holly Johnson was, I think he's one of the best front men that we produced in the UK. I thought they were absolutely brilliant. I thought he was fantastic.
And an incredible vocalist.
Good singer. Yeah. And who was the producer?
Trevor Horn.
Trevor Horn, yeah. I mean, the sound of that track is unique. You know, it's the minute you hear that bottom end coming, you just know what the track is. So for me, it was relaxed, absolutely. That takes me right back.
And I think, you know, we talk about, you know, confrontational, you know, front men and confrontational music and Relax. Yeah. I mean, that shook the fucking country, didn't it? It was like, what's this? And like, you know, and still to this day, when I hear that, and it's an incredible record. And I played it again before this chat, and it's so hard sounding.
And then
I remember sort of seeing them on the Pops and seeing like Holly and who was it? Paul Rutherford. And I was a bit scared, and I was just like, what's going on here? I don't know. I would have been very, very young, but I remember just thinking, and I'd heard that, you know, there was there's some controversy over this record. I had no idea of what. You know, what's the problem? They just want to relax. Like, surely that's a positive thing, you know? I had no idea, you know? I think the penny dropped when I was about 13. I was like, oh, right, okay, yeah, right. Yeah. Now I get it.
Now I get it, yeah, exactly. And pop music and their video was pretty pushy. I mean,
yeah.
Didn't they record two? Isn't there one where there's lots of lasers and then they record another one where they're in the nightclub?
I don't remember.
I thought there were two videos.
There's definitely the one in the nightclub. Definitely.
Yeah.
But I just really liked it. I like the extended mix. And what's amazing about the track is there's the hook, obviously, but it's not really a song. It's a track.
It's the sound of it.
Yeah, and it's a bit of an oral trip between the different sections. Yeah. It's not written in that sort of way, but it doesn't put a foot wrong.
No, you take Trevor Horn's production out of the mix and imagine somebody else doing it, that track wouldn't have anything like it.
No,
Trevor Horn that puts the stamp on it completely. Yeah.
There's a few performances. Work. If you see like the early Frankie gigs, it's obviously it's good, but it's not because it's so studio. That record, isn't it? You can't replicate that as a 4 or 5 piece band. It just didn't have that punch that production had.
Yeah, you need a computer now.
Mm.
Just to plug the computer in and put Holly out.
That's it. Job done. Have it on his phone.
A similar record that didn't have the same hit, but I thought was almost as good, was Spin Me Round.
Oh yeah.
Dead or Alive. Great vocal by
Pete Burns.
He
was bonkers.
The band didn't have quite the impact to me that Frankie had, but that one record is an extraordinary good record.
And that was Stock Aitken and Waterman, wasn't it?
I think it was does it predate Frankie? I can't remember.
I think the Frankie Goes to Hollywood thing had bite. Partly because of the trap, but also because of the gay content. It was so obviously gay.
Yes, it was.
You know, Spin Me Round is a straight song or a gay song. Yeah. It's not specifically gay. But I think Frankie Goes to Hollywood was so in your face gay.
Mm. It was.
That's what upset people, I think.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, fantastic sounding track. Absolutely brilliant.
Right. I'm taking you home for track six. And I'm going to ask you for a favourite song from an artist from your home county.
Oh, that's easy.
From my what?
Home county.
Right.
Or hometown, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Hometown.
Or city. Are we going London, right?
Yeah, London. Yeah, so it gives us a bit. Well, we've both sort of gone for David Bowie Heroes. Although I'd have to say, and I wouldn't normally say this, but I think King Crimson's version of Heroes is better than David Bowie's.
Oh, absolutely. King Crimson's version in Berlin is the what do they call it? The default position for that track.
Yeah.
Don't listen to any other version. There's one particular image of Bowie doing it live, and it's almost like he can't be bothered. It's almost like he just cannot get his head around doing it. Or maybe he's sick of it, I don't know. But when King Crimson do it, and they've got the Polish, I think, the singer's Polish.
You see Jacko, I think.
Yeah, and it's just really solid. They've got two drummers and everything.
Robert Fripp's guitar.
Robert Fripp is just brilliant.
It's difficult with a song. At what point do you credit someone with a publishing credit? Because you can play that song without Robert Fripp's guitar.
Yes,
but it ain't as good. Yeah. And it's not as hooky.
No.
It's always it's a tough call. We've had that discussion with producers before, and it is a very tough call.
And also in that particular version, beautiful bass playing. I don't know the guy's name. I should do.
It's
really smooth.
Band, right?
The whole band is really, really on it. So I would, anybody who likes that track should Google, go onto YouTube rather, and Google King Crimson Berlin Heroes, and it'll come up and they'll be knocked out.
I mean, there's a lot of bands. For hometown, I'd probably have to also include The Clash.
You know,
I saw them at the Lyceum when they did that run.
Yeah.
And they had Topper Hedden on drums, who for me saved the evening because I think the band were either tired or
drunk
or something. It was a bit chaotic, but Topper Hedden was a fantastic drummer.
Yeah.
Joe Strummer and Mick Jones, absolutely great, really good songwriters. Because they came out of the punk period, I think they get forgotten a little bit as songwriters. But I think the London Calling album is almost a flawless double album. Mm. I think it's a fantastic album.
Couldn't agree more.
You know, and when you hear the that E minor, jank, 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 you know, it's just great.
I don't think we value, in the UK, we don't value the artists that we produced as much as we should.
Yeah. Mm.
I really don't think, there's a comedian called Steve Hughes, and he's very funny. And he was talking about, put your arms up if any of you have watched, Britain's Got Talent or The Voice or whatever. And he said, now put your arms down because you should be thoroughly ashamed of yourselves because this country has produced. And then he ran off this list of artists that this country has produced. And it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. Two of the biggest bands in the world, Beatles and the Stones, out of this country.
Mm.
So, I think radio has a lot to answer for in not promoting the way we should cherish these people. Mark Almond is a good example. You know, a really interesting artist, I think, but doesn't get anything like the credit he should get. And everybody's going on about Amy Winehouse. Well, I don't get it, you know? Mm. So I just think we need to be a little bit more, we need to recognise how unique some of these artists are and how proud we should be of them.
I think in terms of hometown, in terms of women, because we're both born in London but grew up in Squinstead, we'd have to give a shout out to The Cure. Who I think came from Crawley. Yeah. I think they did.
Oh, and so
and then you've got the Cutting Crew.
And Depeche.
A couple. Well, they were in the.
Oh, hang on a minute. You're not having them. we've got them. We're having them. Depeche Mode, they're ours, mate.
They're Braintree, weren't they?
No, they're not. They're Basildon.
That's what I meant.
My club. My club's called the Pink Toothbrush, and it used to be called Crocs. And so back in the early sort of New Romantic days. Depeche Mode were our resident band, so they cut their teeth. Okay. You ain't having them. You got The Cure.
they're Essex. I didn't know that, yeah. And also, in terms of East Grinstead, Cutting Crew, Nicky Eade was from East Grinstead. So
if we were from Cornwall, we could say the Wurzels.
<We're not.
laughs> But we're not.
But there's those, obviously, Rolling Stones, all London boys, and there's loads of them.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Cure sound like nobody. No, when you pick them bands and you put them inside, I'm trying to remember the track that you referenced earlier, Rich, that you was like, it just didn't sound like anything else. And I don't think The Cure, it's not like, they've obviously been influenced. No, they don't sound like, they sound like The Cure.
I think that's
such a difficult thing to do. And then obviously to achieve the level of longevity and success that they have.
Yes. It's amazing how people are. When Fred was mentioning Depeche, and this guy on the Twitter or something.
A guy from a
record company came back and said, oh, they're just an 80s band.
Depeche Mode.
Mm. And I said, I mean, can you, this is somebody in a record company.
Yeah, and I said, you got any idea
how big they are in America?
Their stadium status in America.
Still?
Yeah, still.
Three years ago, they were the biggest earning or the biggest grossing stadium band in America. Selling Adele and all of that. It was like
a huge band.
They're absolutely, we're fiercely proud of them. That's why I got a little bit aggy then when I thought, you ain't having them, mate.
expecting them when they move into Berkshire. I'll let them know.
Yeah. They probably own Berkshire.
They probably own Berkshire.
Yeah. We were rehearsing next to them and I got chatting with a couple of them. They're really nice guys. Martin, who plays a bit of guitar on stage. We would talk about different guitar players. And they were very, very friendly, very accepting, not at all judgmental. None of the big I am. Really nice blokes.
Yeah. And shout out to Vince Clark, to leave them and then to start Yazoo and then to start Erasure. It's like there's a man who knows how to write a pop record.
Yeah. Like, well, in fact, both, although they were originally the same band, both those people, you have a great ear for hooks. Mm. Personal Jesus, Enjoy the Silence, Can't Get Enough, which obviously Vince Clark, and then go on to Yazoo and then Erasure. He's got such an ear for her.
Yeah. It's also just the courage of moving.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
The courage of actually moving on. We watched a documentary of Stevie Ray Vaughan the other day, and he was offered the Bowie tour as the guitarist, and he turned it down and went back to his blues clubs.
To promote Texas Flood.
So, it takes a lot of courage to do that.
Definitely.
And you need to know exactly who you are and what you want to do that.
That's an artist, isn't it? That's a proper artist.
When Iggy Pop's career was taking a bit of a dive some years ago, and I think his manager or somebody said, well, they're looking for, what was it? Peter Pan for Peter Pan for Broadway. And, you know, some artists would do have done it for the money. Absolutely.
Gary Barlow.
Yeah, Gary Barlow. but he knows what he is. He knows what he is and what he wants, and he just stuck with it. So good luck to him.
I would have been fucking front row for Iggy Pop as Peter Pan. I would have been all over that.
That would have been interesting.
That would have been brilliant.
He would have thrown some dust up. That's for sure.
Right, for the last track, this is when I ask you to introduce someone to something that they've probably not heard before. So for track 7, it's a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear, please.
Yes.
Well, this is a singer-songwriter, British singer-songwriter called Jake Thackeray. Jake Thackeray used to be on TV every week. And he would do a thing that loads of singer-songwriters back in the 40s and 50s, traveling singer-songwriters, would do, which is you arrive in a town, you look at the local newspaper, and you write about a local issue. Woody Guthrie used to do Woody Guthrie used to do that. Bob Dylan used to do that. Pete Seeger, very common thing. And what Jake Thackeray used to do on this TV show called That's Life, he would write a little song about the current times. And out of this, he became quite well known. And he's got a song called La-Di-Da. I think I wrote down La-Di-Da, but that's me being an idiot.
It's La-Di-Da.
It's La-Di-Da. And he's got other great songs like On Again, On Again. He's not everyone's cup of tea, but just take a time out and listen to how he approaches songwriting. His lyrics are just extraordinary.
He had a real love of the English language, and
he was an English teacher.
He was an English teacher. The story is, I don't know whether it's true, but the story is he was a teacher in Leeds, and he couldn't get, he felt that the kids weren't paying enough attention to what he was saying, and so he had a holiday in France. And discovered the whole chanson,
Jacques Brel
and that. Yeah. Learned the guitar, came back, and then started using song as a way of engaging the kids. That's how I understand it. Now, that may not be true, I'm not sure. But he has a very lugubrious style. He sings in a very odd way. It's very Marmite. You'll either like it or you won't. I don't like a lot of stuff that he did, but there are some key tracks, like Fred mentioned, On Again, On Again, The Widow of Bridlington. There's some really...
The Lodger.
The Lodger is very, very funny. And he's one of those guys who, if he was Japanese, there'd be a statue to him.
Yeah, there would be. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If he was French, there'd be a street named after him. But in this country, we have the most bizarre attitude to some of the most interesting artists that we have. We just forget them, or we brush them out of history. There's a clip of him doing the Cambridge Folk Festival some years ago, and the place was heaving, absolutely heaving. And he's just there with his guitar. It's brilliant. You know, it's brilliant.
Very interesting. So if you get a chance to listen to Jake Thackeray, that's not Thackeray, it's Thackeray.
Thackeray.
And we think he's a fascinating writer that shouldn't be forgotten.
He also says one thing. He says in one of his songs, talking about politics, he said, "If you will put people on pedestals, wear a big hat."
Because they're going to shit all over you.
Exactly. That's most appropriate.
I can definitely hear his influence on the Divine Comedy. When I listen to Divine Comedy, you could definitely hear the influence there. And we make it easy for people to go and listen, gents, because we put together a little Spotify playlist of all the records that you've chosen today.
Thank
so
you.
People can go and listen to them all. Just before we sort of finish up, gents, what are you looking forward to? What's going to be happening in the next sort of few months and the early part of next year? What's coming up?
That's a very good question.
Yeah, we're starting our own radio show with Second City Radio. The reason being is the guy who runs it, Chris Phillips, we've been asked to do other shows, but once we say we want to say what we want to say, it goes, Chris has said, say what you want, play what you want. It's your 2 hours on a Sunday morning. So we're going to start. We start that very shortly. We've got a book we're in the middle of, Autobiography, that Joel McIver is helping us put that together. We've also invested or co-founded the first British NFT platform. Now, for those who don't understand what NFT is, it's a non-fungible token. It's basically crypto art. It's art within the crypto space. It's going to be in the next year, everyone would have heard of NFTs. It is already going mental. And we co-own and are co-founders of the first British NFT site that's called NFTBulldog.com. We have found a couple of new artists, and not new, but new to crypto. One is called Anna Mazzotta, who's an award-winning artist, and another one called Kaylee Marino. Both are really great artists, and their collections will go live in the next, probably this side of Christmas. So there are three main projects. Playing live is just for people who have
physically moving around the world now.
Physically moving around is a nightmare. If you're from the unvaccinated colony like we are, or you've spoken out like we have, then it's incredibly difficult. So that's something we're having to deal with. And that's kind of it at the moment. We've got a new song coming out in January or February. That's called Godsend. That will just be a digital release.
Maybe a documentary come out.
Oh, yes. And also we've been an American well-known documentary maker has asked us to do, he said he wants to do a documentary, predominantly about the weight of the undying appeal of I'm Too Sexy, but obviously that includes us. So that's...
And the undying appeal of us as people.
Exactly.
Never forget the undying appeal of us as people.
I will remember that.
Oh, what a perfect way to finish. Rich, Fred, it's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much for giving up your time today, lads. It's been great.
Our pleasure. We really enjoyed it.
I'm looking forward to hearing the little list you've made up.
Yes, and the songs. And the link. And send us a link, please.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thanks, fellas. There you have it. Right, said Fred. Certainly not on the back foot. Plenty of things to say, you know, staunching their opinions, you know, whether, you know, you agree with them or not. You know, I guess artists have the right to speak out and say what their, you know, their beliefs are and to have that freedom of speech. And aside from any kind of sort of political angles, this isn't necessarily a political podcast in any way, shape or form. But if I'm happy to have artists on, then I obviously have to be happy to let them speak openly about, you know, what they believe in. And also, what I know they're going to talk about is great records and their creative journey, which was amazing. And just to go in, you know, on so many amazing records and to find out, you know, what it was like, you know, going to these like the Greyhound and seeing like so many of them bands at that point must have been absolutely life changing. And yeah, so thanks to Rich and thanks to Fred for giving up their time and coming on there. You can head over to the Spotify playlist and check out that playlist as mentioned at the end. Thanks ever so much for supporting the podcast. Yeah, I'm back next time. See you later.
It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whippin.